Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 103, 10 Tips to Avoid Turkey Trauma. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and of course, this is the podcast. It's all about home cooking and growing our skills and confidence and learning new tips and tricks and having more fun in the kitchen. So glad you could join me today because today I have another special holiday-themed episode, although you wouldn't have to wait for a holiday to make a turkey, but we're going to be talking about roasting turkeys. Now, before I jump headfirst into that, though, I want to take care of a couple quick bits of information that I'm sure longtime listeners of the show know all too well, but you can always send me an email if you'd like to get in touch with me, say hi, ask a question you'd like me to cover on the show in the future. You can always send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, and you can get a hold of me over on Twitter at TKCPodcast, on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast, and I'm also occasionally over on Instagram as well. So you can check me out all those places, always happy and excited to hear from you. And if you're new to the show, if you happen to perhaps just have found the show through the Apple Podcasts feature section about getting inspired for holiday cooking, welcome. Glad you're here. And you're in luck. If you're looking for holiday cooking today, that's what we're going to be talking about. So let's leave the housekeeping stuff where it's at and jump right into 10 tips to avoid turkey trauma. Well, I can't think of many things that a home cook has to tackle that can be more daunting than making a turkey, particularly for a holiday event, whether it's Thanksgiving here in the United States or Christmas or any other special occasion or event where you might be making a turkey for a crowd of people. I haven't done any research on this, but I would have to guess that if I had to pick the two things that people talk most about on the internet when it comes to cooking and food, one would be how to make a turkey, and probably tied for first place is how to boil eggs and peel them. Strangely enough, I don't know, people are obsessed with that. I think I've talked about that before on the show, but there are thousands of ways to do either one of those tasks. And when it comes to turkeys, it can be very intimidating, especially if you're not used to cooking. You know, a lot of people don't cook much throughout the year. They might cook occasionally for themselves for dinner or for lunch or whatever, but they make an effort when Thanksgiving or another holiday comes along. They're really going to go all out. They're going to make the classic turkey dinner with all the fixings, and they realize very quickly that it's kind of a daunting task, and it can be very scary if it's not something you're used to doing. I mean, nobody's used to doing a turkey feast all the time, right? But if you're not used to cooking for groups of folks already, it can be kind of a new thing. So on today's episode, I want to talk a little bit about that turkey situation. And I don't want to claim to be the definitive resource for how to make a turkey. But every year, I think I see some new, interesting method to make a turkey. And I think part of it is people view it as a challenge and are always trying to come up with new, interesting ways to tackle the problem. And I kind of also view it as partially the fault of food media, I think, because everybody's tuned into food, particularly around the holidays. I mean, that's busy season for food media. They feel like they have to come up with exciting, new, flashy ways to do things that you can accomplish quite simply. And of course, making a turkey is one of them. I mean, we all remember, and I think it's probably still happening, the let's all deep fry our turkeys phase, or the new one now is we all have to brine our turkey in a salt solution, right? In a brine solution for 2 days or whatever it is before we roast our turkey. Some folks advocate cutting the turkey up into pieces and cooking it that way. I mean, there's all sorts of different things. I've even seen people say, oh, you should flip the bird upside down so the breasts are down in the roasting rack when you roast it and it will cook more evenly and the breasts won't dry out. I mean, there's all sorts of interesting things out there. And if you do any of these things and they work for you, go for it. I'm not saying they're wrong or inherently bad. I'm just saying they're a little more difficult than basically roasting a turkey. So today I'm going to go through 10 tips kind of from beginning to end, not necessarily a recipe on how to roast a turkey, but we're going to hit all the major points. So I'm just going to go through these tips 1 through 10, okay? Now, if you want the show notes or any links to anything I mention in the show, you can always head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/103. You'll get to the show notes for this episode. Now, one more general thing I just want to say about making a turkey is I approach roasting a turkey almost exactly the same way I approach roasting a chicken. And when I think about it in those terms, it doesn't seem nearly as intimidating. Yeah, a turkey is usually a lot bigger and it takes a lot longer to cook. And again, when you put it into kind of the context of holiday feasting, it can make it seem a lot more complicated than it needs to be. So I just think of a turkey as a giant chicken when I'm preparing it. And everything I'm talking about for the turkeys now is virtually the same thing that I do for roasting a chicken. So you can kind of cross-pollinate the tips, if you will. All right, so let's start out. Tip number one, and I already know a lot of my longtime listeners are probably going to groan when I say this because I say this all the time when it comes to cooking meat or poultry. And that is, if you take one tip away today for making a successful turkey this holiday season, you absolutely must get yourself an instant read meat thermometer, preferably digital. They're not that expensive. And if you can swing it, if you can pay just a little bit more, maybe get the one that has the remote probe. Now, this is usually like a long metal probe with a cable that comes off the end and attaches to a little display piece that you can set somewhere else. So what you can do is you can put the probe into your turkey, and the cable will run from the turkey out the oven door when you close it, and it will attach to your little monitor that you can set on the countertop or by the stove. That way you can monitor the temperature of your turkey in real time. So you don't have to open the oven, pull the turkey out, close the oven door, grab an instant read thermometer, jab it in the thigh, read it. Oh gosh, I've got 15 degrees to go. Let's put it back in the oven. And then you keep, if you do that two or three times, A, you're making your turkey take a lot longer to cook. You're losing heat in the oven. And quite frankly, who wants to lift a big fat turkey in and out of the oven several times while you're trying to check the temperature? The other alternative is you wait until you think it's absolutely done, and then you're probably approaching overcooked territory. Because I'll tell you, the number one problem when it comes to not great turkey is overcooking it. That's when you get the kind of the chalky, the dry, the stringy, the chewy turkeys when it's overcooked, especially the white meat. White meat like the breasts really show signs of overcooking a lot more than like the dark meat and the thighs. Those are a lot harder to screw up. So you stick your instant read thermometer, hopefully the remote probe, into the thickest part of the thigh. That's kind of the thigh. If you're laying the turkey with the breasts up, it's kind of the part of the thigh that's underneath. Make sure you're not touching any bone because that will screw up your reading. And you leave that little guy in there and you're shooting for 165 degrees Fahrenheit. That's when your turkey is ready to pull out of the oven. Now, one other thing I will mention, a lot of turkeys you buy in the grocery store and at supermarkets have that weird little plastic white and red pop-up timer thing stuck in the breast of the turkey. Don't use those. They are wildly inaccurate, and chances are your turkey's going to be way overcooked by the time you get that thing to pop up. I've roasted turkeys that have come out perfectly using an instant read thermometer where the little pop-up probe where I've left it in just to test it has never ever popped up. So I usually just pry it out right away and call it good. So tip number one, a long tip, I know, but get yourself an instant read meat thermometer, preferably one with a remote probe. You're going to thank yourself later. And you can use this for all sorts of things like roasts and beef and pork and other poultry. Okay, tip number two. Now, there's a lot of information out on the internet where you can kind of game the system here. And this is easier to do with chickens because they're smaller. But for a turkey, you really should get yourself a proper roasting rack and a proper roasting pan. It's going to do a couple of things for you. First, it's going to be able to handle that big turkey you're schlepping in and out of the oven. But a roasting rack, what it does is it lifts the bird off the bottom of the rack so air can circulate underneath the bird. So if you just set the bird in a big dish or a pan right on the bottom, it's not going to let the air circulate under the bird. It's not going to cook as evenly. Second, when you set your bird down on a surface instead of a rack, as the drippings and the fat come off the bird, it just kind of sits there and marinates in its own grease. And it's kind of gross when you pull it out of the oven. Eventually, it's going to be kind of wet and sloppy down there. So you really want a rack to lift it off. And a good pan will catch all the good drippings from the turkey in case you want to make a pan gravy. If you ever have the problem, and this happens sometimes when I'm doing chickens and turkey, if your pan drippings are burning in the bottom of the pan as they come off, and then when you pull your bird out, everything's kind of burnt on the bottom instead of just, you know, stuck on and browned or whatever, a couple things might be happening. If you have a really, really big turkey, we have a big family come to our house for Thanksgiving, so I'm always roasting like a 20-ish pound turkey. And it takes all my oven space to do that. I mean, I am down on about the lowest rack in the oven just to fit that thing in there. What can happen is if you have your rack down that low, right close to the elements, and your roasting pan is right there, just because your oven might be at 325, for example, the pan itself is right next to the element. So every time the element comes on, it's getting a direct blast of heat, and it could be burning things right in your pan. So one way you could remedy that, of course, if you can help it, don't put your roasting pan down near the elements. But you could also do something like a cookie sheet under the roasting pan, but above the elements, maybe on the last rack in the bottom, and that can kind of help deflect the heat away from the bottom of the roasting pan and help you avoid burning. You can also put a little bit of liquid in the bottom of the roasting pan. It's not going to steam your turkey. It's not going to hurt it. But, you know, some broth or some white wine or a combination just to cover the bottom of the pan, you can actually avoid burning as the fat drippings come down in there, because it'll just mix with the liquid. Okay? So get a good roasting rack. That is tip number two. All right, tip number three. This is the next couple of tips are just about the turkey itself. But tip number three is make sure you pick the right turkey size. So here's a question. You know, which is worse, not having enough turkey to feed your guests at the dinner, or not having any leftover turkey to nibble on for, you know, several days afterwards, making sandwich and soup or whatever? Okay, total trick question. They're both awful in my mind. So you want to make sure you get a turkey that's big enough to feed everyone that's coming to your dinner. And I like leftovers. Or sometimes I like to send leftovers home with folks that maybe don't have the ability to cook their own turkey at home when they leave your house. So a good rule of thumb generally is to shoot for about a pound, at least a pound of turkey for each adult, and about a half a pound for each child. Now that's with no leftovers. So if you want leftovers, you want to probably add about, a half a pound or something to the count per person. And then you'll have plenty of leftovers for eating later. Now, if you have any questions, again, you can head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/103 and have a link to this great Butterball turkey calculator where you can type in how many people you have coming, if you're light or heavy eaters, adults and kids, if you want leftovers or not. You type all this in, it will tell you about what pound of turkey, what size of turkey you need. So you should go check that out. It's pretty cool. So that's tip number three, pick the right turkey size. All right, tip number four, moving right along here. Chances are really good that you're going to get a turkey at a screaming deal this time of year, but it will probably be frozen. There's nothing wrong with that. Frozen turkeys are great. They can, you know, last in your freezer for weeks and weeks. But the kicker with a frozen turkey is you got to make sure that it's thawed out before you go to roast it. If you don't thaw your turkey out before you throw that bad boy in the oven, you're not going to have a turkey dinner that day. I mean, that's what it basically boils down to. So how long does it take to thaw? Well, if you take the turkey out of the freezer and put it in the fridge, it depends, but a pretty good sized bird, like a 16 pound turkey, I mean, you're looking at like 3.5 days to thaw that thing out in the fridge. So this isn't a night before sort of a task. This is 3, 4, 5 days before, again, depending on your bird size. So bigger the birds, take longer to thaw. Again, in the show notes, I put a time estimator, this time from Norbest, another turkey farm supplier, and they have a thaw time estimator. So type in, you know, how big your turkey is down to the ounce, and it'll tell you down to the minute how long it's going to take to thaw that out. Now, if you wake up the morning of Thanksgiving and you go, oh, crud, I totally forgot to take the turkey out of the freezer and thaw, there are alternative methods that are safe. One of them is not to put it in a warm oven or, you know, set it out in the sun, but it's called the cold water bath method. And that's that's basically filling up a big sink or a big cooler with cold water, as cold as you can get it, practically ice water, and letting the turkey sit wrapped up. You don't take it out of its wrap, but you let it sit in the cold water, and it will thaw fairly quickly that way. And again, there's some information on that Norbest page to give you some tips on how to pull that off. So tip number four, remember to thaw that turkey. Okay, tip number five. Now, I think this is going to be a matter largely of personal preference, but I really think this is the right way to go. And this is the concept of stuffing the turkey when you roast it. My rule of thumb is I do not stuff the turkey cavity with anything I plan on serving at dinner that day. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, for food safety reasons, you're going to have to basically take all of that stuffing out of the bird and heat it up to 165 degrees anyway. Probably you're going to be doing that in the oven after you take it out, just to be safe, again, for your guests. And two, stuffing your turkey actually makes it take a longer time to get to 165 degrees. So it's going to take a longer time for you to roast that bird. So what I like to do is we do make stuffing, we make it separate, but what I like to do is I put a few things in the turkey cavity, but I don't stuff it full. I don't put enough in there really to kind of hamper the cooking time. And just like with chicken, I like to put some aromatics in the cavity of the turkey. And again, I work with generally pretty big turkeys, so I usually have a lot of space to work with, so you can adjust your stuffings, your items accordingly. But my favorite things to put in the cavity of turkey are, again, aromatics, like maybe a quarter of an onion, a couple of cloves of garlic, maybe a couple of quarters of a lemon I like to throw in there, and something like thyme, like some fresh thyme or maybe even some fresh rosemary. But I put those in loosely, and they add some beautiful aroma to your kitchen and your house as they're cooking. It will add some flavor and interest to your pan dripping, so when you go to make gravy, you'll have a little bit more than just turkey. And you can put a lot of different types of things in the cavity of a bird. Again, I don't stuff it completely full and packed, but you could do celery or carrots. I've even seen folks put in sliced up apples in the cavity of a turkey, and that turns out great. So put aromatics in the cavity of your bird, but make anything that you're going to eat or serve at dinner, don't stuff it in the bird and cook that separately. All right, that was number five. So the next item we're going to talk about, we just talked about the inside of the bird. Let's talk about the outside of the bird. And I talked a little bit in the introduction about the concept of brining a bird, where you basically submerge the turkey in a brine, which is a very salty liquid, for a period of time before you cook it, which is great if you have the time to do that and you have a container big enough to submerge a big turkey in it ahead of time. If you want to mix the brine, if you can dispose of the brine, you know, it's just a lot to deal with. I really like to go very, very simple on the outside of the turkey. I only put three things on my turkey. One, I brush the outside of the turkey all over with olive oil. And then I put a very, very liberal amount of salt and fresh cracked pepper all over the outside of the bird. And that's all I do for the outside of the turkey. I like to do oil because as it drips down into the pan, it's less likely to burn. Butter works too, but the milk fats, to me, seem to have a tendency to burn a little bit faster than, say, olive oil. And the oil will help crisp up the skin. And let me just say another quick aside about this too, and I haven't mentioned this, but you shouldn't be basting your turkey. Once you get that turkey in the oven, you want to essentially leave the skin alone, because if you baste the turkey with pan drippings or whatever concoction you have on the side, you know, with a big turkey baster where you kind of pull it out and squeeze liquid all over the outside of the skin, one, you're not really letting the skin crisp up, and two, every time you open the oven to baste the turkey, you're letting heat escape. And it's going to take longer for that turkey to roast. And it's just, I don't think the results really warrant basting your turkey. It's not going to make your turkey any juicier. It's just going to make your skin less crispy, basically, in the long run. So I wouldn't worry about basting your turkey, and prepare the outside of the turkey very simply, olive oil, salt, and pepper. Okay, next tip, which I think is tip number six, cover the turkey with foil while you're roasting it for about the first two thirds or maybe a little bit longer of the roasting time. I just loosely tent it with foil, And this prevents over browning of the turkey. Now we want a nice brown, golden, you know, caramel colored turkey when it comes out of the oven. But if you leave it uncovered the entire time you're roasting, it might get a little dark. And we want to avoid over browning, or burning or anything like that, the outside of the turkey. So I cover mine loosely with foil for about the first 2/3 of roasting. I remove it for about the last third of roasting, and then it'll start to brown up and dry out and get really nice and crispy. Which leads me to my next tip. You're probably all wondering, well, how long are you supposed to cook a turkey? Well, if you're just simply roasting a turkey in the oven like I'm talking about, you do need to give yourself plenty of time. And part of the equation is not just trying to figure out when the turkey will be done, but how that relates to all the other food you might be making at your dinner, right? You want everything to come out somewhat at the same time. The turkey, though, is your pacing item. I mean, it's the one thing that you're making that really dictates when you need to work on everything else. I mean, if your turkey's not done for dinner, it doesn't really matter if all the sides are done, right? I mean, you're going to be waiting on the turkey really to serve. So the rule of thumb for roasting a turkey, I like to do mine at 325 degrees Fahrenheit, right? So if you do your oven hotter, it's going to take less time, obviously, but I like to do it mine at 325. And the rule of thumb I shoot for is about 18 minutes per pound at that temperature, right? So if I've just to do the math simply, if I've got a 10 pound turkey, that's 180 minutes, that's 3 hours, right? So if I were preparing a turkey dinner and I thinking, okay, on Thanksgiving Day, for example, I want dinner at 3 o'clock, that means I absolutely have to get that bird in the oven by noon, and actually probably a little bit earlier, because for my next tip, let's jump right into it, which is tip, I think we're on number 9. When the turkey hits your temperature, your 165 degrees, hopefully your thermometer tells you that, when you pull it out of the oven, you want to let that turkey rest for a bit. You want to let it, it's going to cook over a little bit. The temperature is going to continue to rise for a little while afterwards, but you want it to rest. And what happens when you rest is the juice can kind of redistribute itself throughout the turkey. If you pull the turkey out right away and cut right into it, you're going to lose a lot of juice. It's just going to run right out. Now, the good news is when you've taken the turkey out of the oven, you've set it aside, loosely, again, tent it with foil. You can use the same foil you used when you were roasting it. You can let it rest for 20 to 30 minutes, and that's usually enough time for you to finish up or heat up your other side dishes. So you can mash your potatoes, you can heat up your yams, you can, reheat your green bean casserole or your Brussels sprouts or whatever it is that you're making along with your turkey dinner. As it's resting, you can do those sides. Now, if you need it to rest, if it comes out really early, quicker than you thought, and you need it to rest a little bit longer, you can get away with resting it for quite a bit longer. So for example, if you needed an hour, you could probably get away with an hour. If you covered the turkey with foil kind of tightly and then maybe draped a couple of dish towels over the top, that'll hold the heat in, and you can get away with resting it for a little bit longer so you can finish everything else up. All right, I just had to recount my tips here. I think I've gotten to 10 now. I don't think I've missed anything. So I'm going to take a couple minutes to talk about this last tip, because like I mentioned at the beginning with the remote meat thermometer, at least an instant read thermometer of some sort, I think this tip has the power to really take your turkey up a notch. And a lot of people don't even think about this when they finish their turkey and it's ready to carve. But carving the turkey can have a huge, huge impact on how the turkey tastes, whether it's tender or tough, whether it seems juicy or not, whether your guests enjoy it, frankly. And a lot of folks, what you'll see, and every time you see in popular media, like on a roasting rack box or, you know, whatever it is, a magazine cover, you always see people take the turkey out of the oven, right? They've rested it, whatever, but then they go to carve it and they'll take their carving knife and they'll just start slicing off slices right off the breast, right? Boom, cut off a slice, drop it on a plate, cut off a slice, drop it on a plate, cut off a slice, drop it on a plate, and so on and so forth. So I'm here to say that's absolutely worst way you can carve a turkey up to serve it. Now, why that is goes back to this concept of when you're cutting meat or poultry for that matter, You want to slice things against the grains, right? So when you look at things like beef or even poultry, if you look at a cross section of a cut of meat, especially when it's raw, you can usually see it very easily. You'll notice that in one direction, the muscle fibers run long, right? Like long strands packed together, right? And if you look at the cut end, if you can see, you know, like, well, basically a cross section of that, you can see how that's the grain. That's the grain you can see. So when you cut across the grain, you're not cutting with the poultry or the meat that goes along the same direction as those long fibers, because that makes long stringy fibers. So when you go to bite it, you have to chew through the fiber and you got these long, you know, it's just tough. When you cut against the grain, the fibers are much, much shorter and they don't require a lot of chewing. They're tender. They're not these long connected muscle fibers. If that makes sense, it's hard to explain audibly, but I hope that is kind of coming together in your mind's eye. Now the problem, what carving the turkey, like I just described, where you take a knife and you just start slicing off pieces of the breast, you're cutting with the grain. You're not cutting against the grain. So you're actually cutting off pieces of turkey that you could, you know, have you ever had string cheese where you can just like peel strings of cheese off, right? That's almost like that turkey is going to be. You can just peel long strands of turkey apart. That's going to result in a very tough, chewy, bird. So the better way, and it doesn't take a lot of extra time to do this, but it's going to result in less waste of turkey and just better turkey all the way around, is breaking the turkey down and then slicing it up. So for example, instead of slicing lengthwise right off the bird, right off the breast, you actually remove the entire breast. Then you can take it aside and then you can slice it the short way, right? Instead of slicing it long with the grain, you can slice it the short way against the grain. You're going to have a lot better pieces of turkey. Same way with the thigh. You can remove the drumstick. You can remove the thigh. You can take the bone out and then you can slice it up against the grain. It's going to be a lot more appealing and taste better. Now, because it's very hard to describe, again, over an audio podcast, I did find a really good, simple video from Real Simple, believe it or not, that I embedded in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/103. So you can go there and you can get an idea of what I'm talking about breaking down the turkey and then slicing it up for service. Aside from not overcooking your turkey, I think this has potential to really transform your turkey feast. It sounds ridiculous that just the way you cut up the turkey could have that big of an impact, but it really does. It really makes a big difference. So tip number 10 is carve up the turkey properly. No use going through all that work only to carve it up in a way that doesn't maximize the potential of your bird and make that turkey shine, right? Okay, so those are my 10 tips to avoid turkey trauma. Let me just do a super, super fast recap again, kitchencounterpodcast.com/103 to get back to them all. Tip one, get an instant read thermometer, preferably one that you can look at remotely with a remote probe. Tip two, get a proper roasting rack for your turkeys. Tip three, make sure you size your turkey right for the amount of people and leftovers you want. Tip four, thaw your turkey. Absolutely critical. No thawed turkey, no turkey dinner. Next tip, stuff the cavity of the bird with aromatics. Tip six, simply prepare the outside of the turkey with olive oil, salt, and pepper. Tip seven, cover the turkey with foil for the first 2/3 of the roasting time to prevent over browning. Next tip, give yourself plenty of time to roast the turkey. Remember, 18 minutes per pound at 325 degrees, roughly. Tip nine, let the turkey rest when you're done roasting it. And then finally, tip 10, carve the turkey properly so you get the biggest bang for your turkey buck out of all that work that you just put into it. You want the best possible turkey at the end. All right, folks, that will do it for my 10 tips to avoid turkey trauma. All right, everybody, that does it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I really, really hope you enjoyed that and got some good nugget of wisdom out of there when it comes to preparing your holiday turkey, or turkey any other time of the year for that matter, or chicken for that matter. If you have an interesting tip for the way you do your turkey, I would love to hear about it. You can send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And I will gladly mention it on the next episode of the show. All right. Well, once again, thank you so, so much for taking the time to listen to today's show. If you have a friend or an acquaintance that you think would get something out of this podcast, hey, I would love if you would just take a couple minutes and tell them about the show. I'd really, really appreciate it. That's the single best way to get new people listening. All right, everybody. Once again, for the Kitchen Counter Podcast, I'm Roger. And until next time, happy cooking.